Hi everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Cameo Launch Short Film Podcast. You're joining me, Nigel Morgan, and our ever intrepid video wizard, Mr. George Mole.
Hello, fans of short film.
I wasn't sure about intrepid. I thought just go with it, but it seemed to.
We're there now. Do you know what? I hardly know.
We committed to intrepid.
I think that's what's happened. I've enjoyed myself either way.
Fair play. So, how is life for you, George?
Yeah, not too bad. Can't complain. Working hard, having fun, maxing, relaxing, all cool. You know, the standard.
Shooting some b-ball outside the school.
Yeah, sometimes. I didn't know any more of the words. That's about as far as I go, really. I'm a bit too young for that, I think.
Yeah, well, you missed out, to be fair.
Have I? Oh, what a shame.
Hopefully, you're not too young to have caught the two short films we're going to be talking about this week.
No, there was no age limit on my own laptop. Thank you. I have seen them, luckily.
Very good. Excellent. We are off and running. So, our first film. We're going back a few years to 2013 for the culture clash drama directed by Rachna Suri, entitled Our Lad, starring Shahzad Latif. For those of you who are into Star Trek, you might know him as Ash Tyler on Star Trek Discovery. And our second film is a urban drama directed by Kobe Adam, whose work you may have seen on the BBC drama Noughts and Crosses, called Haircut, starring Robbie G of Desmond's fame. Now, George, I know for a fact you are definitely too young to have seen Desmond's, but you may well have seen Robbie G in a multitude of other things, including Snatch.
Yes, I was just going to say I'm pretty sure he's in a Guy Ritchie film, and you took that from me, yes. So thank you. I could have made it clear that I'd guessed that, and that would have been amazing, but now it's always going to be the other way around, so thank you for ruining that moment for me forever.
Good. Fantastic. I'm glad to be of service. But before we jump into all of those, we're going to start off with our news segment of the week. News coming from the US, as it often does, but also affecting us, again, as it often does. The United States Department of Justice has started a process of overturning what is known as the Paramount Decrees. It's an antitrust law going back to 1948. Now, those of you who are up on your cinema history may recognize the name Paramount Decrees, and it essentially refers to a Supreme Court decision that was made, which forced the big movie studios of the day to divest from the cinema chains that they owned. So back before this decree was passed, movie studios were allowed to own cinema chains. They were also allowed to engage in a practice called block booking. So essentially what that meant is that they were able to fill the cinemas that they either owned in partnership or outright with the films that they made, thereby ensuring that they had financial control of the whole movie making and movie exhibiting process as well. What that meant is that any given cinema would quite often show just the films that were made mm-hmm. by the studio that owned them. Other films were shown at these cinemas as well, but were often not subject to the same preferential treatment as the films made by the owning studio. The practice of block booking was essentially if a particular cinema wanted a film, then that studio said, yes, you can take that film, but in order to do that, you also have to take this film, and this film. Essentially, they would offload sometimes entire slates onto a cinema in order for that cinema to get the one film that they know they need, because it will really boost their revenue and so on. So that practice went out when the Paramount Decree was passed by the US Supreme Court, and the studios were then forced to relinquish their financial control of those cinema chains. So as it stands now, studios as distributors have to present their films to exhibitors, so cinema chains and independent cinemas as well. And those cinemas decide whether or not they want any given film that is being offered. Now, with the Paramount Decrees being terminated, that opens up a potential for the return of practices like these. But obviously this is happening in a landscape which is vastly yeah. different to the landscape in which it originally occurred. For example, the lawsuit from the Department of Justice, which resulted in the decree, I should say, was initially targeted at what was at the time the Big Five studios, which was Paramount, who were named in the lawsuit, MGM, Warner Brothers, 20th Century Fox, and RKO Pictures, who now obviously no longer exist. And it also included studios who were known at the time as the Little Three, which were Universal, Columbia, and United Artists. A studio whose name you will probably notice by its absence is Disney. And Disney being one of the only, if not the only, studio who essentially has, up until coronavirus at least, had the theatrical experience completely locked up, especially with their purchase of 20th Century Fox as well. And one has to wonder, how will this affect the cinema experience? How will it affect the distribution of film, the kind of films which will become prevalent in cinemas? There's obviously already a massive advantage in terms of blockbusters taking up the majority of those spaces, but there are still, at least for the moment, spaces for independent and art house distributors that often produce films which end up being your Oscar contenders. Call Me By Your Name, for example. A24 is quite a well-known sort of smaller distributor outside of the studio system. So one has to wonder what might happen to them once this law is no more. So as of the 7th of August, the US courts have granted the motion raised by the Department of Justice to lift those decrees. And that starts a two-year sunset termination period. So for the next 2 years, that law will still be in effect. But as of 2022, summer 2022, then all bets are off, as they say. And you'd have to assume that a lot of the studios, many of whom are now creating their own streaming services, will be making provisions for that in the run-up.
Definitely.
So, George, what do you think the what some of the consequences may be as a result of this U-turn?
Well, I think it's like you just said. I think Disney. I mean, are Disney in trouble from this? No. This is, if anything, this is going to help them in their plans for world domination. This is one more step towards that. No.
Potentially. I mean, if anybody is in the position to start snapping up cinema chains, it's Disney.
Yeah.
In fact, if going back a couple of episodes, we did speak about AMC getting a bit of a stock bump when it was rumored that Universal might buy them.
Yes.
Now, that turned out to not obviously be the case. That sale was more a rumor. But the fact that it was a rumor suggests that Universal may well have had the means to go through with it.
Yeah.
And that being the case, you know, if they can do that, then what else can they do?
Yeah.
Another way in which this affects cinema here is that Odeon is owned by AMC, which is the biggest cinema chain in the US, in fact, the biggest cinema chain in the world. And similarly, Cineworld owns Regal, which is, I believe, the second biggest chain in the United States as well. So there's a bit of cross-pollination in terms of ownership. So if studios do start snapping up cinema chains, then there's obviously a through line to how it affects what becomes available here in the UK.
We're
going to
see the same sort of things, I mean, how will this affect cinemas going forward? Will these old practices return? Yeah, I think so. I think it's very likely that we will see it to some degree. I think everyone's very scared of it, and we've been hearing about this for a very long time. So I'd like to think that a lot more people are wary of it, and people are still going to go support, you know, post-coronavirus, people are going to go support independent cinemas and go see films where they want to see films. But at the end of the day, yeah, they're some of these old practices are going to return. Yeah, I think so.
Mm. And you mentioned supporting independent cinemas.
Yeah.
I mean, that is part of where the danger lies, in fact.
Yeah.
As, you know, what, even though these cinemas are independent and, you know, you do go to these places for those sort of off-the-beaten-track titles and those independent sort of festival darlings and those kinds of things, they still rely on picking up your big summer blockbusters and your big franchise movies as well. I mean, obviously that's not all they play, but you know, the most anticipated ones. I mean, you know, I don't care how independent or art house you are. If Avengers Endgame is coming out, you're going to book it.
Yeah, you're playing it, absolutely.
If Star Wars Episode 9 is coming out, you're going to book it.
Yeah,
and obviously
doesn't mean anyone's going to enjoy it after they watch it, but don't get me started.
I didn't put that in there as bait for a George rant. I didn't.
I feel like you did.
But anyway. But yeah, point being, if there is a huge film coming out that everyone's going to see, then those cinemas depend on being able to book those films and ensure that they will basically be able to generate that revenue, which will keep them going over the next few months and allow them to then get those smaller films, bring those to the market. Even though they might not be the biggest money makers, they still sort of retain the ability to bring those hidden gems of cinema to a cinema going audience. That becomes difficult if, when you're booking Avengers Endgame, you then have to book the next six Disney movies that are coming out, which will more than likely, and especially if you're a smaller cinema, you're not going to be a multiplex with 20 screens. You're probably going to have one or two screens. So the likelihood is that they can dictate to you what your slate is going to be for the next year. Mm. And it won't be the kinds of films that the people rely on you to see. So this could be a problem. The alternative is they don't show any of those films at all and struggle.
So bottom line, try and support your independent cinema by seeing the independent films they put on at your independent cinema, maybe after all of this has ended.
I mean, and the thing with wondering whether or not people will try and engage in these types of practices, if you cast your mind back to Last Jedi, again, not rant baiting, but at the time, Disney ran into a little bit of trouble there as well because they tried to enforce a lot of unreasonable conditions yes. on cinemas at the time. So basically saying you have to play this on your biggest screen for the next 4 weeks, irrespective of whatever else you have coming out. Basically ensuring that it would be as visible as possible for as long as possible, which, you know, if you're AMC or Regal, you're probably going to do that anyway. So yeah, they weren't that bothered. But your smaller independent single screen theaters, they were like, well, hang on, that's gonna stop us being able to show the films we want to show. I mean, what if people aren't really going after the first 2 weeks?
Yeah,
then what, we've got to play to a half full or empty theater because
instead of playing one of our tentpole films or re-releasing a classic on a proper night, like most independent cinemas get a lot of money from, re-releasing a classic on the big screen, and now you can't see it on the bigger screen because bloody one of the worst Star Wars films to have ever been made ever is playing instead. No, it's not that bad. Last Jedi is way worse. Anyway.
I would like to also point out this is George's opinion. This is not the official stance of the podcast.
This is
itself.
The official stance of the Cameo Launch podcast.
It absolutely is not the official stance of the
this
Cameo
is
Launch
indicative
podcast.
Of a wider problem, I think.
We also would like to take this opportunity to tell you that we're going to be having a Star Wars Last Jedi debate podcast. Probably now. Let's do it now. Do you want to do it now?
No. Not at all. We don't have time.
No. But essentially, from my perspective at least, this is something to watch out for, and I think it is something that we need to be vigilant about. Actually, this does bring up another point with regard to whether or not we'd be looking at cinemas being purchased. Because of the coronavirus, because so many cinemas and cinema chains have taken such a hit, and even as cinemas start to open up again, they'll be playing to half-capacity auditoriums at best, because of social distancing, then a lot of these companies are in a bit of a vulnerable position. So now would probably be a good time to pick up a cinema chain or a block of cinemas on the cheap, as it were, and have them owned lock, stock and barrel by the time we're actually able to go back to the cinema en masse. And that potentially is a situation where we could be looking at the block booking system coming back into force again. But again, this is one of those scenarios where we are going to have to wait and see what does happen. In as much as cinemas may or companies may want to resist, it may also come down to us as cinema goers supporting the films that we want to continue to see as well. So keep your local cinemas in mind and support the independents that are trying to get their voices heard cinematically as well. So, moving on to our reviews. The first film we're going to talk about is a film called Our Lad, directed by Rach Nasuri. This film is about a guy called Ali, who is one of the 500 Muslim soldiers in the British Armed Forces, returning home from duty in Afghanistan and then facing tensions from his brother and his community. So this was an interesting one. As we mentioned, it goes back to 2013, and some of the references in the film are somewhat dated.
Yeah, a little bit.
It makes reference to the Olympics, Jessica Ennis Mo Farah, so on and so forth. I think, actually, in a way, the fact that those references are somewhat dated actually strengthens the context of the film.
Yeah, no, it does.
Because that period, I think the UK goes through peaks and troughs in terms of how it feels about itself as a country.
Yes.
At that particular time, the 2012 Olympics, the UK was very, very proud of itself, and rightly so. It was an amazing performance from Team GB. And, you know, in particularly in the case of Mo Farah, you know, it, despite all of the anti-immigration, anti-refugee and anti-Muslim sentiment that had been floating around prior to that, is still floating around now.
Yeah.
Here is this guy who came to the UK from another country, is a Muslim and has fully embraced his Britishness, and in doing so has just absolutely made the country proud on the world stage. And to kind of contrast that with Ali, who's played by Shahzad Latif, who is in the armed forces, again, something that the UK is very proud of, is its armed forces, and rightfully so. And he has to come home in his uniform, which again should be a point of pride, but is actually a source of consternation, of conflict.
Mm-hmm.
And while he himself, from my reading of the film at least, while he himself is not ashamed of it, there is a certain amount of trepidation and shame he carries going back into his community with the uniform on.
Yeah. If shame could be a suit of armour, that's literally what it's like. It's like he's wearing a suit almost of pure shame. Not necessarily his own shame, as you say. Like, he still has, I think, some pride in the armed forces and what he's done, but he is quite rightfully so tired of it. And it does come off as, a suit of shame.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So the reason he is returning to his community, I don't think it's too much of a spoiler to say, it's part of the pretext of the film, is for his father's funeral. So this is a scenario in which the community is out in force. You have a lot of people wanting to pay their respects, and where he, as the eldest child, should be the focal point of people's respects and sympathies and so on. He almost seems, particularly in his performance as well, to kind of shrink away from that role because he knows what people are thinking about him. Especially at the time, you know, he's in a Muslim majority country from certain perspectives as part of an occupying force. Wearing that uniform in a Muslim place of worship for something like a funeral. There are all kinds of conflicting dynamics going on, and it's the kind of thing that can leave you on edge, on guard, confused, and dealing with that constantly, as he says in the film, just exhausts him. And of course, he then has his brother, who is openly ashamed of him being in the armed forces, wearing the uniform, into the mosque. Basically, the purpose of his brother is to vocalize everything that that Ali is feeling, essentially. Everything that the community presumably thinks of him and isn't saying to his face. And additionally to that as well, you've got the sort of on-the-nose metaphors of his sort of cultural estrangement as he changes into his cheval kameez, and it doesn't fit.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think you need a few of those on-the-nose metaphors as well to kind of get into the meat of the story and really get things going.
Absolutely.
Ishi Din, who was the writer, Rachna Suri co-wrote and directed the film as well. I think the two of them kind of hit that balance quite well between what's supposed to be in-your-face metaphor and the more subtle aspects of how Ali perceives his community, or more importantly, how he perceives their perception of him. George, what were your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I enjoyed the film. I thought it was good. I liked it. Some good script writing, some enjoyable moments, definitely. I thought the score actually was really good, actually stood out to me. Thoroughly enjoyed it. There's a lot of drones and sort of chimes that are helping build tension in the background. There's, without getting too far into spoilers, there's a few key scenes with, is it a package? Is it an envelope that he's got in his pocket?
Yeah, yeah. Well, you won't say what it is, but there's a package
there's a package that keeps coming up, and it keeps coming up, and yeah, you're hearing this sort of drones and chimes every time, building tension every time he's going to the pocket to maybe like pull it out, and that just obviously you want to know what's inside it, and that adds to the tension. I thought that was really well done. It's excellently shot. I mean, there's a spinning crane shot towards the end, which sets the scene, and I was just enthralled by that. I was just staring off almost, literally enthralled by it, just staring at it, and it really did help set the scene, showing that things are a bit disjointed, things are a bit off edge. Really helped with the tension for some of the scenes, which I enjoyed.
Yeah, and also what I thought was really interesting about the way it was shot, is because it was so beautifully shot, the kind of things that they will pick up on, just sort of like the beads of dew on the grass in the cemetery, stuff like that. A lot of the visuals are really peaceful.
Yeah.
And they're really just quite soothing.
Calm and normal. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. And you kind of juxtapose that with what's happening with Ali and his brother emotionally and all of the sort of conflicts that's going on there.
Yeah, exactly.
I thought it was really, really interesting to kind of match the emotional turmoil to such visual
serenity. Oh, absolutely. It's almost like the sort of the inner conflict and the emotional turmoil sort of speaks for itself. If anything, it's put on more of a stage because the rest, it's not muted, but everything else is so calming and peaceful and kind of normal. It feels like a real place in England, like a real mosque, like a real graveyard. Everything about it is so very normal. It does really make the character conflict and the drama shine, which is really, really powerful.
In a very powerful way, the subject matter of it, the fact that it is so focused on the Muslim community, is one of the most British things about the film, in my opinion. Trying to find that sense of ownership of your Britishness while at the same time hanging on to your inherited culture from abroad, from my perspective at least, is a core part of contemporary British identity, is fusing those things into the core principles of what it means to be British and finding a way to kind of marry those things so that you can be proud of one and have that feed into your pride of the other isn't always an easy journey, but it's core to the British experience today in so many different communities, not just the Muslim community. You find it in several Asian communities, African communities, Caribbean communities, and so on. Is finding that connective tissue between your inherited cultural identity and your cultural identity by birth as well, which is also why I think that juxtaposing that with the 2012 Olympics works so well, particularly with regard to reference to Mo Farah and stuff like that. So I really enjoyed this one, actually. Obviously it is a recommendation, and you can catch the full review on the Cameo launch site, and you can find the link to that review in the episode notes of this podcast. So that is Our Lad, written and directed by Rachna Suri and co-written by Ishidin. Our next movie is a little bit more recent, and as we mentioned before, a work of director Kobe Adam, who was one of the two directors of the BBC series Noughts and Crosses. And this film, entitled Haircut, centres on a middle-aged barber who dreams of escaping his rough area in London and becoming a dancehall star, but an encounter with a local drug runner brings up uncomfortable truths about his past and makes him reconsider his importance in his community. So this one, again, I think community is the key word for this one. Both
definitely
thematically and visually, it establishes the community in which the story takes place before the story actually gets going. And there's a real economy of storytelling there. You've got your opening shots as the credits are rolling, which really sets the scene in terms of the part of London that it's in, what it's like, it's the demographic, that you can almost kind of smell the environment, the food, the people, the clothing,
vibe.
The whole vibe of it. It just establishes that really, really quickly, but with multiple visual examples of it before you then are introduced to our protagonist, Jimmy, played by Robbie G. And this one I really liked just because, again, the visual attention to detail is incredible. The little things it picks up. There's a shot as Jimmy who owns a barbershop where most of the film takes place. There's a shot where he enters the room, and that basically just encapsulates who this person is and where he is in his community. It's just this great sort of low angle, looking straight up at him shot. And you sort of see him interact with everybody. He knows everybody's name as soon as they come in. He has a little joke and a bit. He has a little bit of joke with everybody that's there. There's just banter between all of the characters. This film for me kind of encapsulates the mantra of there are no small parts.
Yes.
Even though you've got a number of characters who aren't the focus of the story and who have a limited amount of dialogue and screen time, every single one of them is an essential pillar in the community that the film establishes. The Nigerian barber who talks about how Donald Trump is nothing in comparison to the kind of corrupt politicians that he has to deal with back home. Yes. And all that kind of stuff, and all the banter that kind of comes out of everybody else in the barbershop off the back of that. There's a guy in there that's recently become a sort of superstar model who's in the magazines that are in the barbershop stuff. So, and you know, there's loads of stuff. You learn a little bit about everybody's histories just with a few throwaway lines here and there, and it's not done in a clunky expositional kind of way. It's done in really natural dialogue, and it really pulls you into the whole place. And it does spend a good chunk of time establishing that world,
but it's not over long.
It's not over long at all. It's about 15 minutes, I believe.
Yeah, and you don't really mind leaving it. It's so comfortable. It's so nice. Like, it feels like this place is a place of fun, a place of family, and a place of community. Like, all the characters know each other, and it's believable. It's lovely. Which is why it's so gut-wrenching when the film and the plot starts.
Yes, exactly. I mean, despite how inclusive and amazing the community that's established is, Jimmy is driven by a need to leave all of that behind.
Yeah.
You know, he wants to get his music career started, and it's quite well established that that's the direction he wants to go in. He doesn't want to be a barber, even though he is the center of this family almost.
Yeah.
And you kind of start the movie asking yourself why he wants to leave it behind. Okay, maybe the area is a bit rough, maybe he saw more in his future than just running a barbershop or whatever, but it doesn't seem like he has that bad a life, so why is he so desperate to leave it behind? And as the story sort of unfolds, you start to realise why that is. There's a lot of layered history that the film reveals without kind of dumping it on you all at once. So the pacing of the narrative is done really, really well. And as a result, they're able to fit quite a lot into a relatively short space of time.
Which is good.
So, George, what were some of your thoughts on it?
Yeah, no, what I like on that as well is that it doesn't feel expositional. It doesn't feel like, oh, and I did this thing back when I was younger, and then that caused this to happen, and now you've known, without getting into spoilers. Characters appear as and when they're meant to, don't overstay their welcome. Like, these are real-life believable people, like we were saying earlier. Like, they're all quite nice and clearly have history, and they all have chemistry. No matter, like, if ever there was a film where, like, definitely every single character, like you say, every small part, all has chemistry with someone, there's a connection somewhere. They all feel rooted, and they all feel like they've known each other for a while, which just helps to be believable. Like we said, like, for the first good chunk of the film, you are just with these people in a kind of fairly normal setting of the barbershop, and it feels real.
Just the little idiosyncrasies of each of the characters makes them stand out. I mean, just, you know, a little thing like having earpods in, and the guy who just kind of busts in with his hat and all that kind of thing. He's got maybe two lines in the whole thing.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, he makes a stamp on the film as well. I think its ability to make memorable characters of people with small roles is just brilliant.
Yeah,
absolutely
lovely.
Brilliant. And you know, you do have to then wonder what a filmmaker like that could do with a longer duration and bigger budget. And of course, we found out with Noughts and Crosses. So definitely looking forward to seeing more from Corby Adam.
Definitely.
He's definitely got more in the tank, as I say. Haircut is a very tense, very well-told, well-executed story and very much a recommendation from Cameo Launch as well. So George, I think we're out of movies. I think that's our two for the episode, isn't it?
I'd say so, yeah.
So as always, you can catch both of our reviews on the Cameo Launch website by following the links in the episode notes. And you can also take a scroll through the other films that we've reviewed as well. Feel free to get in touch with us on our socials to let us know what you think of the films that we have reviewed. If you had any alternative thoughts on them, you can reach us using the handle @CameoLaunch on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Additionally, any of you filmmakers out there, if you are looking to have a platform discuss your movie in a forum like this one, please feel free to submit your film for consideration to the Cameo Launch Short Film Showcase over on Film Freeway. So that's filmfreeway.com/Cameo Launch Showcase. Any films selected from those submissions, we will include in this podcast. They will also receive a full write-up and be included in our ongoing promotions as well. So please do subscribe to our newsletter on the Cameo Launch website. We'll keep you up to date with the latest reviews and latest episodes of the podcast. So thanks a lot for joining us. It's goodbye from the intrepid George Mole.
Cheers, everyone. Thank you.
And it's goodbye from me. We'll see you next time. Thanks a lot.